Friends, assalamu alaikum. I want to thank the organizers for giving me the opportunity to share with you my experience with radio. I know that some of you are engaged in radio activities, and with those I want to discuss the possibilities of collaborating later. Those who are not yet engaged in radio, then I invite them to consider it seriously. I'm grateful to CKUT for their sponsorship to this conference. And here we start, media and disinformation. So how are we going to counter disinformation? By becoming radioactive, and actually radio also promotes activism. Why radio? Because it's affordable, it's relatively easy to get a community a spot on the community radio. And CKUT, this is the radio that broadcasts my program, is a campus community radio. All what you need is just some recording equipment. You may even borrow it from the station. Radio is popular. You would be surprised at the number of people who just casually listen, and maybe they will get hooked up in your program. It's also suitable for all ages, and later I will give the example of the Bush Radio in South Africa, where they have kids starting at the age of 6. You can also go up to seniors like myself who are engaged in radio. It's both suitable for men and women. This is a profile of McGill Radio. It operates 24/7. It's more a music radio than a spoken word, but still they have very, very progressive programs. We have about over 200 volunteers. I'm one of them, and you see the funds here come from the students, ad sales, and an annual funding drive. I have to say I'm very pleased. I was, and I'm still very pleased with the support I got from CKUT. None of us who started the program were professionals or had a very clear idea at the beginning. Our program was not even good, but the staff at CKUT were very encouraging and very supportive. This is the name of my program, Caravan. It's bilingual, as you can see. Some ask me, why don't you do it in Arabic? Well, the idea is not to reach the converted, but to reach the society at large. And since we are living in a bilingual society in Quebec, this is the community I would like to address the program to. It's a weekly program, 1 hour. I present about 50 original programs per year. Even if I take a vacation, I go to the Middle East, I make sure that I call from there, or they call me, and I brief them on what's happening there. The program started in 1997. We were a team of 4, and 2 years later, I was the only one left. So I had the possibility either to dropping it altogether or trying to keep it going. So I said, "Oh no, no, let's keep it going." I was confident. I said, "At all costs, let's keep this program," because I realized that if we give up our spot, then it wouldn't be easy to reclaim it back. So this is how Caravan started, and I'm saying here, if I can do it, you can do it. What is your cause? I found that it's very important to have a clear goal when you are presenting a program. It helps you to be focused. So Palestine, of course, then came Iraq, then there was Iran, Afghanistan, most of the Muslim countries. It seems that all the trouble of the world happens in the Muslim countries. So here, I talk a lot about Islam, Muslims, women, and I noticed that whenever you have a subject that's pertaining to women, people get interested, they want to listen. It's very catching when you have a problem with women, you know, especially if you say that they're victims in some way or some kind, or Muslim women in general. Oh, yes, they're very submissive, they're uneducated, you know, all the stereotypes. So it's important to talk about women. And finally, what is your cause? At the beginning, when we started Caravan, we weren't sure what is the focus, how we are going to deal with the problems, how are we going to present ourselves, to present news from the community. But after September 11, everything fell into place. We knew what we had to do. It became very, very clear, very obvious. You know, it was like, okay, now it's in the clear, all the racial prejudice that they have against Arab and Muslim. We see it there, we know what is our task, what's our duty. General guidelines to be focused, to be informed. It's important to know what is the discourse, what is the buzz, what goes on, and to be current. It's not going to help me to talk about Muslim civilization 14 centuries ago. People want to hear what did Bin Laden say today or what happened in Iraq today. So the quest here, the latest news, there is some hype about the news, what's happening. So now, I found is attractive. People don't have any patience with what happened in the past. It seemed to be irrelevant. Not minimizing the importance of going deep into a subject and recalling the history of the problem, but just you have to link it to what happens today. Props of disinformation. I like that word, so I put it as my title, and then I started thinking, okay, so what am I going to put in this slide with this nice title? Oh, and then I realized that many things are props of disinformation. We talked this morning about the language, the association of terms, the statistics, and I must say, now I understand better because of those think tanks. You look at the statistics and the press releases, and they tell you so many believe that Islam is a religion of violence. Okay, and this was one of the statistics put up by the Pew Foundation in the States. And I went and I looked at how did they come to those conclusions? And you would be surprised at the way the questions are framed, and then how the response is poured into statistics and what the end result is. It's really frightening. So there's a lot of manipulation behind the statistics and the polls. So whenever you see a figure, we know a figure is something precise. Oh, but let's go behind and find out what is the question behind those statistics. And I was interviewing a spokesperson from the Pew Research Center, and then she told me, oh, well, if you have any objections about the questions, you have to write to us. It's as simple as that. So this throws the ball into our camp. Opinions, again, find out who is giving those opinions. I read once an opinion, it was about the case of Guantanamo and the prisoners, and it was a lawyer, and the lawyer in a reputable U.S. university. So I called him up, and I would like to interview you on such and such subject. And the first thing he told me, I'm a Zionist. So I didn't know what to say. Well, and I said to him, well, just the same, I think you had a good opinion about Guantanamo. So that was all right, but when you read in the Globe and Mail his opinions, you don't know what is his background. Well, it's an opinion. The opinion pieces, it's a free country, they tell you. If you don't like the opinion, write your own opinion. Write it, sure, but is it going to be published? So there is a bias here. The photos, the photographs are very important, as we can see in, well, by the Israel demonstration. How many times have we seen an actual picture in the right proportions of the wall in our newspapers? I remember when we were struggling during the time of the sanctions regime, and we were protesting against the sanction regime, and we were talking about what effect it had on the children of Iraq, and we would, let's say, send a piece to the papers. If they ever published it, what would you see as a picture? Saddam Hussein. So this was the picture of Iraq. This was the face of Iraq, Saddam Hussein. They seldom had a picture of the dying children in the hospitals. So the picture is very important. Equally important is the caption under the picture. Recently, I've seen a picture that was an Islamic cleric, and he was sitting and surrounded by students, and under the caption, said an Islamic extremist teaching children to hate America. And this picture was taken in Fallujah. Well, I don't think that he needs to teach them to hate America in Fallujah. Oh, and now the props of disinformation, mind you, those are the same as the props of information, which leads me to say that disinformation is everywhere. So let's be very careful. What I'm advocating is activism, actually. It wouldn't be honest to say it's simple journalism, because you are doing this work because you want to do it. You don't have to do it. And you have a goal. When you produce this radio program, you know what you want. What is the message? What are you conveying? It's not only, I want to fill an hour with music or just small talk or anything of that sort. I know what is the impact of, I don't know, but at least I wish to convey or to impact my audience by every single thing I put on my show. What it takes, it doesn't, it takes commitment, you have to be reliable, you have to be organized. I wish I could say it's because I'm so skilled, I'm so brilliant, it comes so easily to me, I talk fluently. No, it's none of the above. The essential thing is that you have to be committed to your cause. Where do you get your information? With all this disinformation, I go to the internet. I read a lot on the internet. The satellite channels, I subscribe to Al Jazeera. Some had some reservations about Al Jazeera, but I must admit I'm absolutely addicted to Al Jazeera. I introduced it after September 11, and the first thing when I saw the host and the programs, I felt, oh my God, that's so much closer to my heart than CNN. And it's not only because of the news, it's because you see Arabs that are intelligent, that are formulating a genuine opinion. You see, those are people speaking from the ground, you know, journalists that have been there in Baghdad, in Fallujah, that are reporting. It's not experts sitting in Washington telling you what Arabs are like and what Islamists think. Those are genuine people. Also, I noticed that when I look at the TV, I don't see anybody that looks Arab, especially women. So I look at Al Jazeera and I fancy that I look like them and I speak like them. And this morning there was the issue of the language, which is, it's very important. It's a pleasure for me to speak, to hear somebody reporting the news in Arabic. I have no problem speaking in English or French. I enjoy communicating in those languages. But there is something that is emotional, that makes you be attached to your mother tongue. And this is part of my culture. So I enjoy it for this reason. And this is why I would like to see it come to Canada legally and openly. Community events. The radio program is important because you can advertise the community events that other media will not advertise. They will not give importance to a demonstration. We announce our demonstrations. We talk to the families of those who have been arrested with security certificates. We have email lists, lectures. I announce my lectures. I go to a lot of lectures, as many as I can. And this gives importance to the events that are close to your cause and close to your heart. What makes your program interesting? You want to be different, and this is one of the original aspects of CKUT, is that they don't want you to sound like CBC. You have to be original, you have to present original material, something that really comes out of the community. I think that you would be interesting if you give a voice to the voiceless, you present your own perspective, and I'm very honest and upfront about it. right at the beginning, I say this is an Arab Muslim perspective on current events. So I'm not fooling anybody. I'm not saying this is the evening news or this is what's happening. Those are both sides of the story. This is my side of the story. This is what I see. I'm upfront about it, but I'm also very careful not to exaggerate, not to inflate any figures. I'm just report the events as they are. I give community news that are not available or not mentioned in newspapers, and sometimes an in-depth analysis could be very helpful. My interviews in generally last 15 minutes, and I also make a thorough introduction. Whom should you interview? Academicians, the ones that have opinions that you think are balanced or you think are in line with your cause. I have interviewed many times Dr. Zaid, Dr. Mohammed El-Masri, activists, people who are directly affected. We can quote statistics saying how many Palestinians' home have been demolished, but I remember once I interviewed a young woman, she was 16, her house was demolished, and just the previous day, and she was talking about how they had to grab their belongings and get out of the house, and where they were living in one room with her uncle, so it's a room accommodating a family of 13 people. And after that interview, I was speechless. I couldn't continue with the program. And this is the kind of impact radio can have. I also talked to spokespersons from like Amnesty, Échec à la guerre. This is a very important movement that we have against the war in Quebec. Every detail in your program accounts, the name, introduction, everything, the pieces, the music. I can't emphasize enough the importance of the music in a radio program. Many times I meet people who tell me, oh, you're presenting Caravan, I listen to your program, and I ask, oh, what do you listen to? What do you like about my program? And they say, the music. So, it's catching, it's nice, but this is part of it. So there's a lot of thought that goes into making a program. It's not just things slapped together. Form versus content. This is from my experience because I'm not a professional. I didn't always have a flawless performance and seamless transitions. Perfection, I got better, of course, with experience and practice and hard work, but the compensation is, I always say, it's the content, it's not the form. I know I'm not going to be perfect, I know I speak with an accent, but I'm going to continue to do this work because the work is important. You know, you have to forget a little bit about your ego. It's horrible when I listen to myself. I say, my God, can I be so boring? But never mind, you know, you have to keep going. There's something beyond just being good or sounding good. It's the work that you are doing. Avoid, yes, those are some of the pointers to avoid. I never use derogatory terms. For instance, I never say that Mr. Sharon is a pig, okay? But I can say he's a war criminal. So there is a distinction, but I wouldn't use any terms. I mean, you don't have to, the Palestinian cause speaks for itself. Developing a network, this is what I came here, hoping that at least we can develop a network, share resources, and linking the radio work to other media. And this is a little bit more ambitious, but it's equally important, I think, that we would be able to have a lobby group. And when I put here your impact, that was the question of the visas to journalists that was raised this morning. And if you would allow me, I will give some examples here about radio. The good. Bush Radio is a fine example of community education to fight AIDS. One original aspect is the innovating project called Children's Radio Education Workshop. It started in 1996 with six children going on air on a Saturday for 2 hours. Today, the program includes 60 children ranging between 6 to 18 years, coming from different geographical areas of the community. Bush Radio trains children in radio skills so they could write, script, research, present, and engineer their own show. This is a different kind of radio, le retail. So this is radio really as pure information. It's a dial-up African news service based in Montreal. So you call a number, you get access free of charge of a menu of half an hour listening to news from or about Francophone Africa. The owner thought of this idea when he couldn't get help from Heritage Canada to broadcast on a regular radio station. And by the way, Heritage Canada does not give any grants to media, ethnic media. Radio is a tool for therapy. This was brought to my attention by La Presse, the French daily in Montreal. La Colifata, based in Buenos Aires, it gives inmates of a psychiatric hospital the opportunity of participating in radio broadcasting. So this is a therapeutic value to radio. And by my own experience, I can tell you it is great. And radio as a tool for disinformation. Do I need to give any examples? No, but there is one that I would say is a champion. And this is the new Radio Sawa, which means in Arabic, together. And from the website of Radio Sawa, I quote, it's a service of U.S. international broadcasting, which is operated and funded by the Broadcasting of Governors, an agency of the U.S. government. So I hope that this convinces you of the importance of radio. Further from the website, they say, one of the guiding principles of Radio Sawa is that the long-range interests of the U.S. are served by communicating directly in Arabic with the people of the Middle East by radio. And Radio Sawa seeks to win the attention and respect of listeners in reporting the news. Radio Sawa is committed to being accurate, objective, and comprehensive. Now, in preparing this presentation, I went to their website and I looked at some of the news in Arabic, and the titles, the reporting, had a repulsive familiarity. The aggrandizing of the chief, the subservient tone, the empty rhetoric, all too similar to what you find in undemocratic Arab countries. The news on Saturday, June 26, they reported on their website, the Arabic one, that five Palestinian extremists in Nablus had died. Now, I went to Al Jazeera. Three Palestinian leaders in the West Bank affiliated with Fatah, Hamas, Islamic Jihad, respectively, were killed, in addition to five militants. Israeli Defense Forces had thrown grenades in a tunnel where the militants were hiding. Al Jazeera gave the name of the leaders and their title. The last one is Radio Mil Colin. This would be a radio as a tool for mobilization between September 1993 and March 1994. The training of militia intensified in Rwanda. Extremist radio station, this one, Radio Mil Colin, began broadcasting exhortation to attack the Tutsis. Human rights groups warned the international community of impending calamity. Of course, the rest is history. There is one quote that was referred to this morning about Palestine. I have it here, and if you would allow me 1 minute, Mr. Chairman. It's from the BBC website, dated June 22nd. It says, a new survey has shown that many people in Britain think the Palestinians are occupying Israeli territory and not the other way around. In my experience, many Canadian politicians are similarly confused. Further, we read, despite extensive media coverage of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, some Britons think Palestinians are refugees from Afghanistan. The findings come in a study by the media group at Glasgow University. Related to this, published in The Guardian and simultaneously The Observer, June 20th. I'll read just this paragraph for you. Since the Palestinians began their armed uprising against Israel military occupation 3 years and 8 months ago, British television and radio reporting of it has been, in the main, dishonest in concept, approach, and execution. I don't think we will find this kind of comment in our newspapers, you know, admitting that so openly that it is dishonest in concept, approach, and execution. Thank you.